Today, the Dirtbag hosts Earth Watch with Glenn Andreessen is your host. He's going to talk today about gardens, produce in the gardens, compost, starting veggies, the whole thing. And at 11 o'clock on Democracy Now!, a remembrance of American peace activist Tom Fox, whose body was recently found in Baghdad. Also, a look at the crimes of Slobodan Milosevic, who died this past weekend. And Earth Watch is... has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from One Green World, a nursery located near Molalla, Oregon, offering hard-to-find plants designed to help you grow your own fruit and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. For a free catalog, the number is 503-651-3005, and the email address is catalog@onegreenworld.com.
Well, good morning. You've reached the second Monday at 10:30. It must be time for the Dirtbag. Indeed it is. Good morning, Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now until 11 o'clock. A mishmash in the Dirtbag this morning, and that will include your calls, 503-231-8187. Any type of question, gardening question you have today, particularly things that would be happening this time in the produce garden. I'll be talking about what to do with cover crop that you planted last fall, composting questions, and vegetable starts, and what not to start at this time. One announcement to pass along, this once again from the Home Orchard Society. For those of you who made it to the Scion Exchange last weekend in Canby at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. Man, was that a madhouse for the first couple hours there at the Sign Exchange. Maybe many of you were Dirtbag listeners. Ted Swenson, past president of the Home Orchard Society, and just heck of a nice guy and very knowledgeable, joined me last month to talk about that and other fruit growing questions. But if you missed all of that, there is still another event, and this one is close in here. This is at People's Food Co-op at 3029 Southeast 21st. This will be next Saturday, March 18th. Two classes going on from 10 to 11:30 is the beginner's class, where you'll learn the theory and tools and techniques about grafting. And then an intermediate class at noon, as it reads here, further your grafting abilities. Grafting techniques for older trees, repairing damage, and making multi-variety trees. Bring your own tools, which will or could include hand pruners and a small sharp knife, and X-Acto knives work great. Bring those if possible. If not, don't worry about that. Just show up, gosh darn it. There is a small charge for that, but you do get a free rootstock to graft with the price of each class. Space is limited to 25. You can pre-register and actually should pre-register, as space is limited, as I said, to 25. You can register by emailing this address, Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at ecosky.com, E-C-O-S-K-Y.com. I'll leave that here at Metro, so you know that information if you call in later. Okay, first thing first today, talking about composting. Or no, cover crops. Let's get to that first. But let me remind you, this is your chance to talk to me, 503-231-8187. If you did plant the cover crop, as I always do and recommend in the fall, then the question comes up this time of year about what to do with that cover crop and how to dispose of it, or just how to deal with it, essentially. I'll tell you what I do and then what the books say. Sometimes they're the same. Oftentimes they're different. My cover crop of choice is fava beans. These are really a pea, member of the pea family, and they're a legume, so they're a nitrogen fixer. This is a rather tall plant, or will be tall, by the end of next month, April. Right now, they took a hit during our cold spell that we had a month or so ago when we had the temperatures down to the teens. They're not all that hardy. And so there was some top growth kill on that, but they're perking up and growing again now. We just need some warmer weather. I'd settle for average temperatures now, which is 55 for this time of year. Gosh darn it, we probably won't even get to 50 today. In any event, they will continue to grow until April, and I let them grow until April, in fact, even until May, if I don't need the space for growing vegetables. And instead, I will let them flower. They have a beautiful white, dark blue blossom that has a slight fragrance, pleasant fragrance, and attracts beneficial insects, and is just a nice addition to the garden to look at. Nice big tall stalks, 4 or 5, maybe even 6 feet tall, depending on how your soil is. And that growth above ground is equaled or has more biomass underground too. And that's where we want it. That's the so important organic matter. And the timing on it is somewhat tricky in that if you want the full benefit of the nitrogen that has been fixed in the soil on the roots of these legumes, then you need to cut off the plant or somehow kill the plant before the blossom turns into a seed pod. Because once that plant is triggered into forming a seed, that's where all the nutrients then start flowing. And so many of the nutrients from the roots and the leaves and whatnot will go into making the seed pod. And that's not where we want it if it's a true cover crop and we want to get most of the nutrients into the soil rather than into the seed, because we're not planning on eating the seeds of the fava beans. Although you can, and some varieties are better than others for that. So when the blossom is starting to shrivel a little bit, but before it starts forming a seed pod, that is when I deal with the plant. And with the fava beans, which are more like a corn stalk than a ground cover, like crimson clover or ryegrass or any of the vetches are, I'll just cut them off individually because they're about a foot apart or so. And generally, I do one of two things with the stalks then. If I'm planning on planting a crop that will require much of the garden, of the surface area, for example, carrots or beets or, that's what comes to mind right now, onions is another. If I'm going to be planting one of those crops, then I will take away the whole stalk and compost it or use it on another bed as mulch. But I will not rototill the soil. My beds at my northeast lot have not been tilled some of them by hand, but not rototilled mechanically for well over a dozen years. And I'll just plant around the stalk that is in the soil still. And with fava beans, they generally just rot within 1 to 3 months, but still I don't take them out. Meanwhile, I've got all this great organic matter in the soil, and that's where I want it. Now, if the bed is going to be planted in those plants that take more space between each plant, for example, tomatoes or broccoli, eggplant, peppers, whatnot, I'll just cut the stalks and leave them right on the bed surface. And when it comes time then to plant peppers, for example, I'll just clear a small space for the pepper plant and prepare the hole, and it goes right there, leaving the stalks around it. Makes a great mulch, and it's just easier for me as a gardener, too. When you think about it, you know, what we want to do here is do what Mother Nature does, and she generally does not remove organic matter. It stays where it falls. You know, winds blow, and sometimes things get dragged around by animals and whatnot, but generally it will stay right where it is and enriches the soil that way, letting the microorganisms and some of the macroorganisms, such as worms and pill bugs and other small detritus eaters, drag that material or chew it up, make it smaller, so the microorganisms, bacteria and fungus, can start consuming it and recycling those nutrients. What could be easier than that? Well, that's the modus operandi for fava beans. But I do also occasionally will plant crimson clover, just because it's a great cover crop as well, a good nitrogen fixer, and it has beautiful bloom, wonderful plumage, so to speak, and it has to be dealt with a little differently because it is more of a mass of plants that are coming up. There are every inch or whatever it happens to be at an average in any event. And with those, it might be appropriate to weed whack those down with a mechanical weed line trimmer. Or you can do it with your hand pruners, not your hand pruners, but your pruning shears. Just whack, whack, whack it down. Most of us will just have small city lot gardens, and that's certainly within the realm of a workout for one to do. But after that, then the same thing can the same techniques can be applied. Although it's a lot easier to leave the tangled mass of roots in a bed that will just be having tomatoes or broccoli, eggplant, those that are planted far apart, because it is quite a tangle of mess of roots underneath, and it makes it harder to plant, for example, carrots, where you may want to, you have to be manipulating the soil a little bit more. So any of those massive root cover crops include crimson clover, the annual ryegrass, the vetches, you know, there's probably another one, but that's what's coming to mind now. And all of those, except the annual ryegrass, are legumes, and they will fix nitrogen in the soil to convert some of the nitrogen that's in the air and in the soil, and it will convert it into nitrogen that plants can use, because the nitrogen that is in the air is not usable by plants in that form, which is a bit of a mystery, because the air that we breathe is about 80% nitrogen, but it's not in a form that plants can use. Okay, well, this is Glenn Andreessen. You're listening to The Dirt Bag. Give me a call if you have questions about cover crops or composting, which we'll head to next, 503-231-8187. This is a great time to get your compost going if you haven't already, because really any time is a good time to compost. Many people will just compost the material that they generate as they generate it. Very few of us actually form or build a compost pile all in one day, although it's possible if you have the raw ingredients, but very few people do that, and fewer still probably have hot compost piles where we're paying attention to the carbon and nitrogen ratio in order to generate the heat, which will lead to many benefits, which the least of which is it's the most efficient and the quickest way to compost, and it also kills weed seeds, not to mention human and plant pathogens, but it takes more effort on the part of the composter. But keep in mind always, as a beginning composter or veteran, that while you can speed up the composting process and you can slow it down, you can't stop it. So you will be a successful composter. The question is, how much effort do you want to put into it, which will lead to then how fast you will indeed compost the material. So as mentioned, most people just generate the material and put it into the compost bin as it's generated. And that's just fine. I have three or four different compost systems going at my house, and only one of them is a hot compost pile. The others are, well, one is a leaf bin devoted completely to leaves, and the other two are bins where I just stack up the material as I generate it. But the key to this type of composting, if you're not planning on turning it at all, and I don't turn that one at all, it just sits, the key is not to give it too much of any one thing. You don't want to give your compost pile indigestion, so to speak. And having two piles is good because, for example, if you have a bag of grass, it's better not to put it all into one bin, but to spread it around. You know, no more than 2 to 4 inches, I would say, in any one compost bin at any one time. And if you are in the city of Portland and have curbside garbage pickup, then you also have yard debris pickup every other week. And don't feel too bad about putting material out there. I would rather see that happen than to overload the compost pile with grass clippings, for example. One note to pass along that with my involvement with Metro, I know about this, is that Metro will not be having the compost bin sale this year at the one-shot type of sale that they've had for the last 10 years or so. But instead, they will be offered year-round. That's right, year-round compost bins available from Metro for $35. These are, once again, the Earth Machine Composter, and they will be available at the Metro Paint Facility on Swan Island. And to get more information on that and how to get there, although it's very, very easy, just as you turn off the main road that goes down, I think that's going, turn onto Basin Avenue, it's just off to the left there, really the first kind of an island of offices there, and that's where the paint facility is. But you can call the Metro Recycling Information number, 503-234-3000 is that number, to get more information on the $35 Earth Machine. It's a great it's a great bin for beginning gardeners, and very appropriate if you have a small to medium-sized garden and are not generating tons of material. But it's relatively small size is maybe too small for something, for a regular.
Glenn, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Since no one has called yet, 231-8187, this is Tammy in the air room. I compost, you've convinced me that leaves are a great material to compost, and I compost them pretty regularly, but in my own yard, I feel limited about the leaves I can use because there are pine needles in there. I have maple and alder and birch, but there's always going to be a few pine needles, yeah.
That's not a big deal at all, even though they don't break down as quickly. Do you compost these leaves with all your other material?
Yeah.
So it's not a leaf bin?
No.
Not devoted?
Everything.
Okay. Well,
just like you. I want to be just like you, Glenn.
Uh-huh. Well, I do have a leaf bin where I do just pile up leaves from the street when after people rake them out there. They're nice piles for me.
Yeah.
Just in my street, I'll gather those and put those into just a leaf bin. And after 2 years of that's some nice material. But one of the nice things about having this mix of leaves that you have, including the needles, is that it won't pack down as much. So the needles, the bigger leaves, the smaller leaves, such as the birch, you've got a nice mix there. So I think generally that's okay. The key for composting is to pay attention to all of what it requires, and part of that is air or oxygen, really. And if it can't get air, then it is not going to compost as quickly. It also needs the right amount of water. A wrung out sponge is the moisture level that we recommend. So if you can squeeze more than a drop out of it, then it's too wet, which is why we say let's cover the bin.
I gotcha. Okay.
All right.
Thanks. You've got some calls.
All right, let's do it. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
thank you. I have a question about coffee grounds. At a lot of the cafes, you can get coffee grounds, and I've just been assuming that I just mix them in with, like, straw and whatnot, and that'll be good enough. Is there anything I need to know about coffee grounds, and are they safe, blah, blah, blah? I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Well, believe it or not, there have been some studies shown that coffee grounds will help deter slugs, believe it or not. So you might try that, too, even before they're put into the compost pile. They're safe. They're certainly safe. They're considered a nitrogen source, and so mixing with straw would be good, or would be a good ratio anyway. But the key, once again, is there's not too much. You know, if it's just a small cafe that's not, you know, a coffee shop, you know, and you can get 5 gallons of grounds every day, you know, that would be probably too many. Although once it starts getting broken down, et cetera, the worms like it. I mean, this is just one of the reasons why having more than one compost bin is great, because you can spread around the material that you have. I think maybe you had another question, but I don't remember what it was. Okay. All right, so let's stay on the phones. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Love your show. There were questions about pine needles and other things in compost, and I'm trying various ways to get rid of crabgrass weeds in the garden. And so my question is, if I mix the grass with my compost, I'm not sure I have a big enough pile to heat it up enough to kill the grass seeds.
Uh-huh.
I might be spreading that all over the garden. That's always my worry.
Yeah.
It's a big problem I have, so.
Well, this is probably a problem more during the summer when they're seeding rather than now, for example.
Okay.
Because just cutting the grass, getting the clippings, and composting them, there shouldn't be a problem at all with the crabgrass re-sprouting. Is that true?
I'm not sure.
Well, are you just clipping it, or are you pulling up the plant some too and putting them in, roots and all?
Oh, I'm doing that too.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's my philosophy on it. When I'm weeding out in the garden, I frequently just even if there's seeds or the crabgrass, quackgrass, whatever it happens to be that has the pointy little roots.
Yes.
I'll just leave those piles right in the garden. Of course, you wouldn't want to leave it in the on the lawn.
No.
where it is, but I would put it nearby and just let it decompose right there in place. You might say, well, aren't those weeds going to germinate? Are the seeds going to germinate, or aren't those grass, the quack grass, going to grow?
Right.
You know, well, it very well may, but it's limited to that little pile right there,
isolate it.
Well, yeah, but it's very easy to just come out there with your two hands and turn that pile over every 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And by doing that, you disrupt the roots from, you just kill the plant essentially, because you're destroying the root structure on it again.
Okay.
So, you know, it may require a little bit more work out there, because you have to go back and turn it. But what you'll find is that under that pile is just a wealth of life going on there. From ground beetles to spiders, you know, wolf spiders taking refuge there, to worms.
I've seen that.
And that is the sign of a healthy ecosystem, because all of those, from the ground beetles, which are great predators of pest insects, and some will eat slug eggs,
okay,
to the spiders as well, are, of course, insect eaters. And the worms are there to pull that material down, or will pull that some of that material down into their burrows. So you're creating good habitat by leaving these piles.
And how long is it? I mean, how long should you wait before it's safe to take that underlayer and put it out in your garden?
Well, it becomes part of the garden within about 4 to 6 months, depending on what season it is, probably 3 to 4 if it's spring, because it really helps when it's wet and it's warm.
Yeah, I mean, really spreading it around everywhere.
You mean the compost itself, or these small little compost piles that I've been talking about?
The part that's broken down underneath, and that's my last question.
Yeah. Well, I really don't spread it around at all. It just becomes part of it. It just breaks down right in, right there. And, you know, it's just amazing. You know, next year you look at that and you'll say, gosh, this is just beautiful material here. and I didn't do anything. You know, another benefit here is that a lot of times when we're pulling up weeds and whatnot, we might be considered, or I take the time, or I seem to think that I need to take the time to shake the soil off the roots. But when I'm making these little piles, I don't care as much because the soil is staying right there. And I'm not kind of disrupting then that soil by or taking away the soil, the good stuff, and putting it to the compost. So I guess that answered her question enough. We're ready to go on here. One more call. More call. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yeah, were you going to talk about starting vegetables indoors? Pretty soon it'll be too late.
Depends what you're going to be starting.
Well, what do you start out first?
Well, the warm crops should be started now. I just last week started my tomatoes, peppers, and eggplant, and I've already started some of the cucurbits, the broccoli, cabbage. Well, actually, I haven't started broccoli yet, but cabbage and onions and kale. But those can be started every 2 to 3 weeks through July, or actually even into August. So you're not too late on that at all. I'll start the more of the warm season crops late April. That's the squash and the cucumbers. Onions should be started now. Leeks I don't start until May, generally, believe it or not, so I can get a good harvest in October and November. I've had better luck of starting those later. Corn can be direct seeded in May. May is when we really start cranking it up because that's when it's warm enough for the warm season crops. But the tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, don't delay on those because it's best to get those as big as you can early. But, you know, part of the drawback is, well, are we set up for that at home? You know, if you don't have a greenhouse, then it takes a lot more effort on your part because of light levels.
Now I've got a nice kitchen window.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Except that you have to keep rotating that plant then because it'll start leaning.
Oh, okay.
To the light. And, you know, if we do get seasonal temperatures here of, 50 to 60 degrees, it's fine to put those out during the day and then mm-hmm. take them in at night. I have a greenhouse, but I take them out and put them out on my patio when it's warm just to start hardening them off. And what it does when it's outside, too, is that it toughens that plant up so it sways in the breeze. You know, inside it's a pretty coddled life, and if you don't, it's kind of a weakling, and if you put it out in May, and it's not so much the cold temperatures that will do it in, but what if we get a stiff breeze or a rain, and it's just a little weak, the 98-pound weakling.
Yeah, I've got some leeks that have been inside over the winter, and they're kind of spindly, and they kind of flop over.
Well, one of the things, and I've never tried this, but I know Territorial Seed Catalog says for onions that if you can't get them out and they get to, say, 5 inches or so, just scissors them back to about 3 inches, and just so they don't get too spindly. And you might try that with the leeks, too, although you could probably plant them out and then cover them. They're pretty tough plants. You know, lettuce can be started now, too, inside, and it's hardy to about 20. I had some that overwintered from the fall, and I covered up some of them. We had the cold weather, and some of them that were outside the cover did get nipped a little bit, but they still survived. You know, you think lettuce is kind of a wimpy plant, but
write any of this in the Alliance in your monthly column?
On what to start when?
Yeah.
Oh, I've probably covered it through the years, but I'll maybe I've already got April's in the can. But May, it's a good idea. It wouldn't be too late, at least, to talk about the timing on things like that. So.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. Well, another dirtbag here and gone. The next one, April, it will be during the pledge drive, as we call that, yes. And I'm hoping to have a representative of permaculture from the Portland permaculture chapter here and tell me how to say the word and talk about what it means. So thanks a lot, Tammy. This is Glenn Andreessen. Thanks for listening. I'll be back in a month.
It's 11 o'clock, time for Democracy Now! On KBOO Portland.